NPR.
So the other day, Stacey, I visited a park in Manhattan to meet Gillian Tett.
I'll follow you, yeah. Okay. This is your local park, right?
Gillian is a journalist with the Financial Times, but we were there to talk about her background in anthropology, the study of people and culture. And she argues that anthropology is this quite useful way of looking at the economy.
So economics tends to kind of assume away culture. You know, people have their preferences, they like to do what they do, and economists often just don't question that. What anthropologists want to do is the opposite, like really understand where these preferences and cultural proclivities come from.
And using her anthropological powers, one of the first things Gillian noticed about me in that park was my beard.
Your beard, Darian, it's very noticeable. So it's actually much more tame now. For a while there, you had like a full-on like Nostradamus, Karl Marx, Rasputin-level beard going on. It was like a foot long for a while.
And why did I do this? I don't know, but Gillian had an explanation.
One of the ways to explain pandemic beards, lockdown beards, is with a concept called liminality. When people started sprouting beards during lockdown, it was one way of people signaling to themselves and others that actually this wasn't a normal moment in history. It was a kind of transition, weird limbo moment.
So an economist might look at, you know, razor blade sales plummeting and say, oh, guess people prefer not to shave that much. End of story. But an anthropologist will dig deeper.
Gillian Tett's new book, Anthrovision, is full of examples like this that make you see work and business differently. She makes the case that when we think about economic questions, like when should white-collar workers go back into the office, we should invite anthropologists to the table. A lot of big corporations are doing this already. This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Darian Woods.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Today on the show, Anthrovision. We're going to go through a few stories that illustrate just how anthropology can help us understand the economy. We're going to go to a Japanese high school, a dog food company, and visit a very strange and peculiar group of people known as Americans.
I'm going to go to shop.npr.org/planetmoney. What we've got for sale here is a t-shirt, a sticker, the patch from when we sent a satellite to space, bunch of Planet Money stuff for sale at shop.npr.org/planetmoney for all of the Planet Money lovers in your life.
One goal of anthropology is to make the strange familiar. And an example of this starts with a Kit Kat bar. Here's a Kit Kat.
Oh.
I brought along a couple to eat with Gillian Tett.
So I thought we could have a break.
Of course, the tagline for Kit Kat, probably don't even need to say it, was give me a break. Break me off a piece of that Kit Kat bar. And this idea of a break, this tagline, it was like the cornerstone of the chocolate bar.
And it was very much seen as a post-war British invention aimed at British factory workers and office workers who wanted a quick treat between their jobs.
But the company was struggling to make enough sales in the Japanese market. About 20 years ago, they were thinking that they should just withdraw from the country altogether, until they hired some anthropologists.
And what they found was that for a lot of Japanese people, a chocolate bar just was not associated with relaxation. Have a break, give me a break, didn't really resonate. And the anthropologists also noticed this other thing.
In this Japanese island of Kyushu, Kit Kat sales were soaring between December and February each year. And they couldn't work out why until they sent someone down there and realized what was going on.
So traditional market research would have, you know, focus groups with these specific structured questions. But an anthropologist's approach is different, right? You begin by observing with an open mind, see what you can see. And what the anthropologist found was that Kit Kat was really popular among the island's teenagers.
Teenagers in Kyushu had noticed that the Japanese phrase kitokatsu, which means you shall overcome or we shall overcome, was very similar in sound to Kit Kat. And so, seemingly as a joke, the teenagers have started giving each other Kit Kat bars as a good luck token. And the Japanese managers of Nestle said, let's see if we can try to use this, and started marketing Kit Kat under the kitokatsu tag. And within a couple of years, it had taken off in a dramatic fashion as a good luck prayer token for teenagers doing exams.
rather than just accepting the declining sales as whatever consumers prefer, like an economist might do, or, you know, just going in with a bunch of pre-written survey questions like a market researcher might do, Anthropologie helped save the Kit Kat bar in Japan.
And it also helped another chocolate bar company, Mars, who you might not know this, Stacey, but they also sell dog food.
And they used to assume that selling dog food was all on the basis of nutritional science and biology. So they put all pictures of scientists and healthy dogs on the front of their dog food packets.
And yeah, you know, people want their dogs to eat nutritious foods. But actually, the anthropologists found that dog owners are a lot more focused on something else.
One of the main functions of dogs is actually nothing to do with animals. It's to do with humans, because dogs help people inside a family bond together and talk together, and it improves human-to-human connection rather than just human-to-animal connection.
I mean, for thousands of years, a dog was basically like a piece of machinery, right? It slept out on the farm. Now it is inside the house, like maybe in our beds, on the couch. It is a member of the family and something that helps you connect with your family.
And so Mars ripped up their old advertising and packaging, and instead of having a picture of a vet with a lab coat, you're more likely to see a smiling family on a lawn brought together by their shared love of their dog. It's another example of Anthropologie coming to the rescue.
And Anthropologie, by the way, can also be used by politicians and in public health. For instance, when the pandemic started to spin out of control in the U.S., Jillian knew that masks would bring a real benefit, and not just as a barrier to stop the virus.
There's been a lot of study done in Asia by anthropologists looking at the impact of masks. And that shows very clearly that part of the benefit is psychological, because the act of putting one on each day, the ritual, serves as a psychological prompt to people to change their behavior. But it's also got a very powerful symbolic element to it in terms of signaling to yourself and other people that you're upholding civic norms and trying to be responsible to the group.
And of course, you know, Darian, civic norms and group responsibility, I don't know if you've picked up on this, but it is not exactly what, you know, New Yorkers or people in the U.S. are known for.
I have to admit that when the pandemic started, I thought the New Yorkers would be the last place on earth to try and embrace these, because they pride themselves on being very individualistic.
But here's where she says New York was really smart about masks.
There were wonderful messages about being New York tough. Don't be a turkey, wear a mask. About trying to really be patriotic and civic-minded. And after a few months, mask wearing became almost ubiquitous. In fact, became so much ingrained in everyday life that now people are still wearing masks, even though they're often not required to.
Yes, in fact, Darian, I just got back from Idaho visiting family, and like nobody wears masks at all there. Almost nobody.
Okay.
Yeah, in fact, I got some like kind of not great looks when I did wear a mask around.
Interesting. I mean, I wonder what the messaging was like over there.
I mean, it was like clearly just the messaging about masks had been really different. And Jillian says things like this can show us the value of anthropological insights, not just for businesses, but also for policymaking.
Culture really matters. You have to use social and medical science to try and beat a pandemic. Secondly, cultures aren't fixed in stone. They can change. And they're important, but we don't have to take them for granted. And thirdly, we can really benefit by looking at each other. And part of what Anthropologie does is try and look around the world at different cultures. And if only American leaders had looked across to Asia and tried to humbly learn some lessons early on, boy, would the trajectory of the pandemic have been different.
Jillian Tett's new book is called Anthrovision, A New Way to See in Business and Life.
This episode of The Indicator was produced by Emma Peasley and fact-checked by Michael Ha. It was edited by Kate Concannon, and The Indicator is a production of NPR.
What happens after a police officer shoots someone who's unarmed? For decades in California, internal affairs investigations, how the police themselves, were secret. Until now. Listen to On Our Watch, a podcast from NPR and KQED.